appropriate late last night. Late last night. But it would have been of coming. That I thought it would have been it would be an appropriate thing to do to have a shiur on Megillat Esther, since it is the Monday before Purim. We've had shiur. I've been giving shiur on Megillat Esther for the last 3 weeks in shul. But I've been giving a series on Megillat Esther for the last couple of weeks in shul. Not everybody would have necessarily been there. However, I'm not going to rehash those shiurim. We'll have the problem with shiurim on Shabbos is somebody put it, they go into the ether, and they kind of like disappear because there's no right. Official record. So there's always plausible deniability. I can always say it never happened. I can say whatever I want. There's no record of it. But nonetheless, I thought it would be an opportunity to kind of. Not so much pick up where we left off, because I wanted the material to be independent, but to kind of address a different aspect of Megillat Esther, given the fact that we have really one shiur to do so. We are having an evening Purim program, or a Purim Tish, where we're going to have more Divrei Torah and conversations about Purim and Esther, but not in the full context of a shiur. So I want to focus today. I thought I would focus on Perek Bet. We spent a lot of time when we discussed Purim, when we discussed Megillat Esther. There's a lot of focus, a lot of conversation about the Mishnah and about Haman and Mordechai and Haman and their relationship and what happens and the Yad Hashem and Ashkacha and the God's name being missing. And there's a lot of pieces of the story we spend a great deal of time focusing on. I've always found that the one chapter that gets the least amount of coverage is chapter 2, where Esther is taken into the palace of the king and the relationship between Mordechai and Esther. I'm not sure why it gets less coverage than other chapters. I suspect just because it's less
problematic.
No, I don't think it's more problematic. I think it's less dynamic. I think it's laying the foundations in the of the story, but it doesn't necessarily, on the face of it, have a kind of a dramatic piece to it. Nonetheless, I think it's a critically important part of the story and one that is worth exploring. So, I'm going to start from... I really want to pick up on the relationship between Mordechai and Esther, but we're going to just briefly start from the beginning of the parak so we have a context. Achara dvarim ha'ele, anybody have the place? Esther Perek
887.
Chapter 2. Actually, I might as well give this out because we're going to need these in a few minutes. Let's pass this down. Achar hadvarim ha'ele kishoch chamat ha'melech ha'chashverosh. זכר את ושתי ואת אשר עשת ואת אשר נגזר עליה. In the language of the Megillah, which is written in a kind of a, almost the Megillah presents the story of Achashverosh almost a kind of a mockery form of satire, where he's everything involved in Achashverosh's world revolves around wine and food and women and what have you, but clearly Achashverosh is far more sophisticated and far more significant a historical figure than the Megillah would on the face of it present. Nonetheless, after his great double feast and everything that happened with Vashti, he wakes up the next day and remembers that Vashti's gone. What happened to Vashti? Et asher nigzar aleha. Somebody asked me last night, actually, a teacher in the community asked me, what was the story with Vashti? Like, what happened to her? The Megillah doesn't tell us. It just says that the kingdom should be given to somebody else, but it doesn't tell us what happened actually to Vashti.
Or do we know?
We don't. And we can conjecture.
I don't think anything good.
in conjecture.
Red was take off.
Lo yavo, shelo tavo vashti lifnei hamelech Achashverosh. Well, says the Vashti can never again come before the king. What happens to her? Doesn't say. Just says umalchutai ten hamelech l'utah tava b'mena. Give her crown to somebody else, but she can no longer come before the king. Does that mean he killed her? Does that mean he hanged her?
Like hanged and hung.
I like hanged and hung.
Shabbos did hanged and hung.
Yes, that's another story. It relates to one of my favorite faux pas in and mistakes in Hollywood. Can I tell you that story?
Hollywood. California.
Hollywood, as in the movies. Hollywood.
There is Hollywood, Florida. You know.
I know.
That's why she asked.
My Fair Lady. Right? Am I familiar with My Fair Lady?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so My Fair Lady. What's the character's name? Rex Harrison plays.
Oh, right.
The teacher. Why am I blanking on his name? She's Doolittle.
Right.
She's Liza Doolittle. Why am I blanking on his name for a second? Okay, whatever. The professor. He's a professor of language. He's a professor of philology. Professor of language. Professor, right? This is the guy who's supposed to teach you how to speak.
Linguistics,
right? Supposed to teach you how to speak. So in his famous song about why can't the English learn to speak,
right,
he makes a grammatical mistake. And I love this. Every time I watch the movie, I show it to my kids. It's classic that the authors and the writers either made a mistake because they didn't know what they were doing, or they just thought nobody else would notice. But he writes in the song, whatever his name is, total blank
He's
for a moment. Right? He writes in the song, by right, she should be taken out and hung for the cold-blooded murder of the English tongue.
Henry Higgins,
right? By right, she should be taken out and hung for the cold-blooded murder of the English tongue. It's wrong.
But it does rhyme.
So you couldn't do it.
That's why.
So
they could. It's called artistic license. Right.
It's called a grammatical mistake. Right. And you're Rex Harris, and you're Henry Higgins. You can't make grammatical. Anyway, we are digressing. All right. Be that as it may, we don't know what happens to her. I have a suspicion. And it's not that he killed her.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
But although the Medrash says he did kill her, and I don't believe that she was banished either. I'll share with you in a moment what I think happened to her. But nonetheless,
it wasn't good.
The next morning, they wake up, and she's no longer his queen, and so he needs a new queen. Pasuk bet. Vayamlu narei ha-melech mesharetav yivakshu la-melech narot betulot tavot ma'eh. Say the Narei HaMelech, we need to bring together all the betulot tovot mareh, all of the young maidens, right? Narot betulot. Ve'yafken HaMelech pekidim v'chom midrot malchuto v'yikpetsu et kol nara betula tovat mareh shishan abira al beit hanashim al yad hegei sdis HaMelech shomer hanashim v'naton tamukehen. Go bring all of the maidens, young, unmarried, right? Nara betula, beautiful, we'll have a nice big beauty pageant. Will select the new queen, and this will all be taken care of by who's responsible? Hege Sris HaMelech. So all of the officers of the king are called Sarisim. In Persia, Babylonia, even actually all the way back to the days of Paro, right, the king's ministers are called Sarisim. An interesting question altogether whether in fact they were, right, Sarisim and Sarisim castrated. It's not clear whether in fact they were or it's just a title, but in all cases this Hege, he is responsible for the gathering of all the women in the palace, giving them their perfumes and their makeup. Naton tamukehen v'anarat asher tita b'nei ha-melech timloch tachat vashti v'ita v'davar b'nei ha-melech. The one who will be chosen will rule in Vashti's place. She will become the queen. The king liked the idea. V'yaskei. And then we begin our story, we are introduced for the first time to Mordechai. Ishu diya b'shishan b'irah shemam Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish ish yimini. There's a great deal of discussion as to the lineage of Mordechai and to whether or not at this listing, Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish. Kish, of course, is also the name of who's the most famous Kish in Tanakh? Blank Ben Kish. Saul, Shaul Ben Kish, correct. Saul is Ben Kish, and so there is a great deal of discussion as to whether or not this Mordechai is in fact a descendant of Shaul HaMelech, and if so, sort of the Midrashic line that links Mordechai to Shaul and links Haman to Amalek kind of sees the story of Purim as a address or a tikkun or a fix of the mistake that Shaul made in not destroying Amalek. Here comes Mordechai to engage with Amalek. Kind of links in some way back to Sefer Shmuel, which is a good thing for us. But nonetheless, a little bit of background on Mordechai. Asher haglam Yerushalayim imagola asher haglatayim Yochanya melech Yehuda asher haglat Nebuchadnezzar melech Bavel. Mordechai is there as an ish Yehudi because of the exile of the Jews in the days of Yochanya melech Yehuda. What does it mean?
Was he the last king?
He is 11 years before the Churban, or 10 years before the Churban.
So
Yochanya,
he was in the earlier exile.
He's the earlier. There's two exiles. There's Galut Yochanya and the Galut Zidkiyahu.
Okay.
So there's the earlier exile, the first exile to Bavel under Nebuchadnezzar.
So that's
when
all the royalty left now.
Everybody left. They took everybody.
I'm saying the first one.
They took everybody. They took all the artisans, pretty much they left a very small crab. Anyway, that
is there anything to the fact that he needs a queen right away? I mean, or just that's the way it is.
Why wouldn't he need a queen?
I know. He needs the queen immediately.
Well, it'll take him 4 years to pick a queen, so I don't know how much immediate is. This is year three, and the queen is chosen year seven. So how much immediate is debatable, but be that as it may.
The process is
searching.
This is year three after Vashti's been banished?
The Mishnah is in year three, Esther is taken in year seven. Actually, I sort of addressed a little bit of that in the first Shir on Shabbos when we dealt with the historical context.
Okay.
Because one of the mysteries in the history of the Megillah is what happens between year three and seven.
Right.
Why is there a four-year gap?
Yeah.
So my theory that links back to the story of Xerxes and the battle of against the Greeks
right.
is that that's the 4 years in between the two.
Mm.
Be that as it may, this Mordechai is Ish Yudi. Ish Yimini, a little bit of a contradiction there. How can you be an Ish Yehudi and an Ish Yimini? So Ish Yimini means he's from Shevet Binyamin. Ish Yehudi means he's of the exiles from Malchut
Yehuda.
So just Chazal, again, in the Midrashim, kind of play on this dynamic. Is he from Shevet Yehuda? Is he from Shevet Binyamin? And the answer is, well, he's from Malchut Yehuda and from Shevet Binyamin, because Malchut Yehuda was comprised of two tribes, Yehuda and Binyamin. Vahi omen et hadasa, hi Esther bat dodo. Ki en la av vaem, ve anara yefatoa vetavat mare, uvamot avia ve ima, lekacha Mordechai lo levat. This sentence is going to be the focal point of our discussion today. Kind of read through the parak first. But Mordechai adopts her. He omen et Hadassah. Mordechai adopted Hadassah, who is Esther. Bat dodo. Mm-hmm. Bat dodo means
his cousin,
right? Daughter of his uncle, which is the Hebrew word for cousin. For she had no father or mother; she was an orphan. And when her father and mother died, Mordechai adopted her as a daughter. Mordechai lakach batikach. Lekacham Mordechai lo levat. Vahi bishamad var hamelech v'dato v'kavetz narot rabot el shishan abira al yad egai. All of the maidens of the land were taken. Vati lekach Esther abet hamelech al yad egai shemen anashim. Esther was also taken into the jurisdiction into the palace overseen by Hegai, who was the guard of the all of the maidens taken for the king.
Did Mordechai take her?
Vati lakach. She was taken. That's clear. Vati lakach. She was
like
taken.
So, like their committee that's collecting the women.
Traveling through the land. Vati tava nara beinav. Vati sachesed lefanav. She found favor in the eyes of everybody who saw her. Vayivahelet tamlukeh manatela tetla. He wanted to bring her all of the different makeup and perfumes and oils that everybody else was having, and to give her seven maidens to assist her, and they would appoint different women to be her assistants. And through all of this, Esther refused to divulge her nationality and her birthplace, Amma bet Moladata. Why? Because Mordechai had so instructed her. Uvechol yom bayom, Mordechai mitalech lifnei chatzar bet anishim ledat et shlom Esther vet ma yasema. And every day Mordechai would come by. Mordechai was an officer in the king's court, most likely a judge, Yosheb Bishar HaMelech, and he had access. And he would come and he would check on her, see how she's doing, see what was to become of her. Ma ye'aseba. Uvagiyato narav narav lavo al ha-melech, achashrosh. So each maiden had a turn, if you will. Miketz yotla kedat hanashim mishne masa chodesh. At the end of 12 months, each one had a you understand why it takes 4 years, because it's 12 months of preparation for each one. Six months in oil of this and 6 months in oil of that, and they're bathing and preparing themselves. And you have to understand why there's so much, first of all, why there's so much focus on the oil and the perfumes, but besides that, why is this so significant? And we'll see why in a moment. It's very clear. It's a very important observation. She has that one opportunity to come and make herself likable to the king. In the evening, she would come to the king. In the morning, she would be sent back only to a different palace, to a different place. After the night with the king, she would return to the house of Shashgaz, not to the house of Hegai. These are two different places. Hegai is responsible for the Shomer HaNashim. He's responsible for all of the women who are designated to spend that night with the king. Shashgaz is responsible for looking after the Pilagshim. Who are the Pilagshim? Concubines. They're all the women who were selected. No.
Okay. She's already been
everybody
with
else.
King.
In other words,
she's already
the
king.
The selection has not been completed yet. They go to the king, and once they go to the king, they become automatically the king, part of the king's harem and Pilagshim. So they go from the palace of Hegai to the palace of Shashgaz. Lo tavo od el ha-melech ki im ha-melech ha-feitz ba v'nikra ab-b'shem. They will never again go back to the king unless the king calls them. And that story we know from Esther. Even that law even applies to Esther, who is chosen as the queen. Now, it's critically important that we understand this piece of the story, because without it, we underestimate the significance of Esther's story.
Can I just ask one question?
Let me finish my train of thought first. Okay. It's critically important to realize that the palace of Shashgaz is a very different arena than the palace of Hegai. Think about it for a moment. Picture in your mind's eye what the palace of Hegai looked like. Okay, so all of the women who were taken, they're all being groomed for their night with the king. And they're bathing and they're preparing and they're making themselves, and there's a lot of excitement and there's a lot of energy and there's a lot of competition.
Must be jealousy.
A lot of that.
And a lot of jealousy. And then, after their night with the king, where do they go?
The recital.
They go to the palace of Shashgaz, which is essentially the equivalent of a life sentence.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Because where
they can't go home.
Is home.
And
the concert of the king, somebody who's been to the king, can never go home. There's no option there. This third option is not to go home. The option for all of those who are taken and not chosen is they end up in the palace of Shashgaz, part of the Pilakshim of the king, and they were there they will remain for the remainder of their lives. That's a piece of the story that we miss when we read the Megillah superficially. This is the nisayon into which Esther is thrown, which is why it's Vatilakach Esther. They're not looking to be taken. We have no way of knowing how many were part of this Beit Hegai Shemen Anashim. But let's assume for the moment 100 women are taken, 150 women are taken, 365 are taken, one for every night of the year, who knows? One is going to be chosen as the queen, and the other 364 are going to remain prisoners in Beit Shashgaz for the rest of their lives.
But that means, but Mordechai is sending Esther to do this, so you realize what position he's putting her is.
That is a huge assumption, and I'm asking, she was taken like that. Mordechai didn't bring her. We're going to raise that question in a second. Okay, but what it reads like is that she was taken. I don't believe. Again, it's a machlok in the mafarshim, but I don't believe that she was.
I can't believe
that she was taken by Mordechai. You're saying.
She was taken by Mordechai. Vatilakach Esther Obet HaMelech.
Is there anything to the fact that they had a different relationship rather than uncle?
I'm going to talk about that in a second. We're going to talk about that in a second. Hold that thought. We're going to talk about it for now. No. But we're going to talk about that in a second.
A lot of hidden Pasuk Tetvav.
We could spend a year doing Megillat Esther. Maybe we will one day. Uvagi ator Esther bat Avicha Eldon Mordechai. Right? Esther's turn, bat Avicha Eldon Mordechai, right? Avicha El is the Dod Mordechai. When it came to Esther's turn, Asher lakach lo levat, who had taken her as a daughter, lavo lamelach, it became her turn to come to the king, lo vikshad davai, ki imet Esher yamai, hagai shis melach, shemen nashim. She asked for nothing. No perfumes, no makeup, no special dresses. She asked for nothing because she doesn't want to be taken by the king, right? This is not where she wants to be. But God has a different plan. Which is also an interesting phrase because last one to be described as finding favor in the eyes of his or her, or those who imprisoned him or her, was Yosef. So there is a great deal of parallel between the story of Esther being taken almost as a slave into the palace of Achashverosh and finding favor in the king's eyes and rising to a position of authority and power very quickly and being in a position to save the Jewish people to the story of Yosef in exactly the same fashion. Vatilakach Esther for the second time. Vatilakach Esther el haMelech Achashverosh haBet Malchuto b'Chodesh Esri uChodesh Tevet b'Shnat Sheva leMalchuto. She is taken into his kingdom in the month of Tevet in the seventh year. That's the year 3 to year 7 discrepancy we talked about. V'Yahav haMelech et Esther mekol haNashim v'Tisachen haChesed lefanav mekol haBetulot v'Yasim ket haMalchut b'Rosha v'Yamlech haTachat Vashti. So indeed, he finds favor in her eyes, or she finds favor in his eyes. He chooses her and gives her the crown. Vayas haMelech mishte gadol lechol sarav v'avadav et mishte Esther, makes a big feast of Esther. V'nachal haMedinot asai, gave discounts on taxes that year because he's celebrating the fact that he found himself a queen. V'yitem maset giyat haMelech. And then we have one of the most mysterious psukim in this parak. Uvehikavetz betulot shenit. Mordechai yoshev b'shar hamelech. Ein Esther magedet muladata ve'et ama kasher tziva aleha Mordechai. As he gathered betulot for the second time, round two, Mordechai is sitting in the entrance to the court of the king, and Esther is refusing to divulge her birthplace and her people, as Mordechai had instructed, that Ma'amar Mordechai Esther Osa, and she would continue to obey Mordechai's command, Kasherita Be'omnaito, as she did when she lived by him as her adopted father, Kasherita Be'omnaito. Why is Achashverosh gathering Betulot Shenit? Mm-hmm. Have you ever noticed that?
He has Esther.
That he has a second round?
Mm-mm. I don't remember.
He's enjoying right. the whole process.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think that's the issue at all.
Oh, what do you
but
mean?
There's a mystery here that needs to be resolved. Why is he... He's already chosen the queen.
Right.
Yeah. There are so many subtleties in the story that we miss because we read it so quickly.
Yes,
but uvikavetz betulot shenit, what is he doing with round two?
Maybe he's afraid something bad will happen with Esther, so he has to.
Maybe.
I just wanted more women in the town.
Maybe. I don't think so. I don't think so. Because the sentences here read, again, read the sequence. Uvikavetz betulot shenit, as he gathered the betulot for a second time, Mordechai yoshev b'shar hamelech, and Mordechai is sitting in the courts, in the king's court. Ein Esther magedet moladata ve'et ama. Esther is refusing to divulge her nationality and her birthplace. Meaning, there's a link in the text. It's half a sentence. It doesn't say Achashverosh went and he gathered a second round of women. It says, as Achashverosh went to gather a second round of women and Mordechai was sitting in the queen's court, Esther was refusing to divulge her identity. What's the connection between the two?
That their relationship isn't so great.
No.
They do a whole background check?
I suspect the fact that the Megillah has to tell us twice that Esther was refusing to divulge her background is a significant factor, right? It's not just an arbitrary factor. So that's my point. Is that it says twice that she refused to tell them who she was.
Oh. So that
correct?
Implies
twice.
That
it says so in Pasuk. Pasuk Yud. Lo egid when she's first taken. Lo egida Esther at amavet moladata ki Mordechai tziva aleha shelo tagid. She refused to divulge her nationality, her birthplace, because Mordechai had so instructed her.
Right.
Then she gets taken as the king's queen.
Right.
She wears Vashti's crown, and then at the end of the parak, as the king gathered maidens for a second time, she was refusing to divulge her birthplace and her nationality as Mordechai had instructed.
So
she had more
loyalty
to Mordechai.
Get this sense.
Well, I'm not worried about the loyalty to Mordechai. Of course, the loyalty is to Mordechai. But the significance is, for some reason, the Navi needs to tell us for a second time
that
she was refusing to divulge that identity. And for the second time, it includes a reference to a round two of Achashverosh's
harem
beauty pageant, whatever you want to call it.
Security problem.
Right? I think that the reference to the collection of the women for a second time is a significant piece. Meaning, the fact that she is refusing to tell them who she is, it's not an accident, and it's not standard operating procedure. Remember the last time Achashverosh had a queen who refused to do his bidding?
Rid of her,
right?
Bye.
It did not end well for her. Right. So here she's taken a queen, and the assumption would be, king marries somebody of significance, of royalty, of stature, of some significant background, and they've got this woman who the king likes, who they've already chosen as queen, and they have a problem. And the problem is,
she's not telling where she comes from.
She's not divulging any information as to who she is, where she comes from. Einest magedet. Magedet is in the, what's the technical term for the verb form where it's...
It's an ephod?
It's a verb that's continuous. What's the technical word for it? Not past tense, not present tense, not future tense. It's just ongoing.
Transformative?
That's the term for it. We're English teachers. Where it's like... It's a verb form of
I'm sure you could look it up on Google.
Continuous, right? It's not that she didn't tell them. La higida Esther. It's ein Esther magedet. Magedet means she's not telling. The difference between didn't tell and not telling is that not telling is ongoing. Ein Esther magedet. No matter what they do, no matter what they threaten her with, ein Esther magedet. What's the threat? The kavetz betulot shenit. The threat is, you don't tell us, we'll throw you back to Shashgaz. And we'll do this all over again. And so we come, it's Betulot Shenit, round two, just to get Esther to divulge who she is.
Wow.
And she's refused to, and she refuses to do so. So not only does she refuse to cooperate with the step one, with the shishachol l'shem b'shem and amor, with the 6 months here and the 6 months there, not only does she refuse to tell them who she is when they sign her up, nationality, not telling, birthplace, not telling, background, not telling, royalty, not telling. Who are you? I'm not telling. Right? What's your name? Not telling. All I know is her name is Esther. But her background is a mystery. Achashverosh doesn't like mysteries. He doesn't like mysteries. And not liking mysteries means
he might get rid of her.
That he threatens to get rid of her. V'kavetz betulot shenit.
But she still doesn't do it.
She's not telling.
But she still doesn't do it.
She's not telling. It's a remarkable story. It's a piece of the story that we don't always see, but the parak revolves around...
You read it, you read it all the time, and you never
right.
even think about it.
And you never notice it. And you never notice it. The story revolves around her stubborn refusal to disclose her background, her nationality, her people, where she's from, and which, of course, looms large in the story as it unfolds, because when Haman sets his sights on Mordechai as a Jew, she's well protected in the palace because nobody knows that she's Jewish. Right? So it plays a critical role. The question that the Mefarshim struggle with is, was that the intent? Right? What was the intent of not disclosing her identity before the story unfolds? Remember, Haman hasn't been appointed yet. Haman doesn't become appointed till Perek Gimel. We're in Perek Bet. So what's going on in Mordechai and Esther's mind that makes this decision not to disclose her nationality and her identity, why is that so critical to the story before Haman plays a role? So I'll show you a couple of interesting pieces. Take a look on the source page.
So none of this revolves around the fact that you are scared to be Jewish and admitted?
We'll see. This is now the question that the Mefarshim struggle with. What is the reason for this stubborn refusal, even at the threat of being thrown out of the palace and back to the palace of Shashgaz? What is the reason for her refusal to share her identity? So Rashi, classic approaches are in Rashi and the Ibn Ezra. Rashi suggests the following: Asher lo tagid, I pass back and pass a good. She refuses to tell them who she is. Et ma ve et moladata. Kedei sheyomru shehi mimishpacha bzuya veyishalchuha. Sheim yadu shehi mimishpachat Shaul haMelech hayomachzikim ba. Says Rashi, the reason she's so bent on hiding her identity is not because she's Jewish, but because if she is from the family of Mordechai, that means Mordechai, remember, is Mordechai ben Shimi ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish. Mordechai is descended from kings. So? And if Esther comes from the same lineage, then that means that Esther comes from royal blood. That is the last thing in the world, says Rashi, they want Ahasuerus and his henchmen to find out. Because it would only make her
more suitable
for the throne if she is royalty.
Right.
How much better could Ahasuerus get? He has a big beauty pageant, takes all the betulot of the land, and he lands up with royalty. How lucky can a man get? So says Rashi, the whole purpose here was to enable her, to make it less likely that she would get chosen by the king, which is clearly what she wants, right? She doesn't want to get chosen. She's not cooperating. She's not taking the oil. She's not taking the bath. She's not cooperating. She doesn't want to make herself beautiful. She does not want to be taken. Part of that is not to disclose who she is, make her less desirable, the less likely that she'll have to worry about spending time with a non-Jewish king, when that is not part of what she wants to do. One second. Sandy, looks like she has a question in her mind.
I'm trying to figure out how she's going to be any better off or worse off, if she's going to be the queen or if she's going to be in the harem.
From the perspective of... Correct. From the perspective of Esther, she'd rather be in the harem. Right?
Why?
Because she's a Jewish girl, doesn't want to be married to a non-Jewish king. How simple is that?
He'll call on her whenever he wants.
So that's a sex.
Well, the chance is less that he's going to do that.
The queen will call. He's not going to call the Pilachim. That's less likely. So, from a perspective of the queen, that's the last thing she wants to do is be taken.
But from the whole story of Purim, to accomplish what the whole story accomplished.
But they don't know. But again, what the story accomplishes is much later. That's not part of their frame of reference. This is where she's coming from. Where she's coming from, the perspective of the Bechira of being chosen by the king. I just want to be chosen by the king. Yeah.
But that doesn't explain the second time Ein
Magedet,
because she's already been chosen as the
queen. That is correct. So that is the weakness in Rashi's interpretation, is that it doesn't explain why she stubbornly holds on to this, except to suggest that she's hoping
she'll be thrown back,
right? They'll take the crown away from her and throw her back to Beit Sheshgaz, because that's really where she wants to be. The last place she wants to be is in the palace. She'd rather be in Beit Sheshgaz, because then she doesn't have to be with Ahasuerus, right? There's a fundamental issue here, which is, right, you have a Jewish girl who's being forced to be married to a Gentile king. I can't put it any more bluntly than that. So says Rashi. And Ben Ezra, on the other hand, I like the Ibn Ezra's interpretation. I just don't think it's pshat. But the Ibn Ezra takes the opposite approach. It's a remarkable piece. In explanation one, right, gives three different explanations. Explanation one, Yeshamim ki Mordechai lo asa nechona sheziva al Esther shelo tagid ama ki pachad shelo yikachena hamelech leisha im yeda shehi miagola. Ibn Ezra says, according to some, Mordechai was wrong. Mordechai should have let her tell him who she was. But Mordechai was afraid. What was he afraid of? He was afraid that she would become less desirable if they knew that she was from the slaves of the exiles of Judea. And Mordechai wanted nothing more than the nachas of knowing that his daughter was chosen as the queen of Persia. What nachas? My daughter's the queen, right? So, therefore, out of fear that she wouldn't get chosen if they knew that she was Jewish, he says, don't tell. Just keep it a secret. Don't tell anybody. Pretend you're Persian, and maybe you have a chance. It's a remarkable interpretation. Again, unless you understand the second time around, he's afraid that if she discloses that she's Jewish, they're going to throw her out. Because there's always the option of throwing her out. This is not a lifetime position. Of course, Vashti proves the fact that this is not a lifetime commitment. Now, it's a remarkable piece. I don't think it fits the pshat of the story, because it doesn't sound to me like Mordechai's concern is that he wants her to be taken. Right? It's vatilakach Esther. She doesn't want to be taken. She's refusing to participate. She's not taking the tamu keavet. She's not taking the perfumes and the oils. She's not cooperating. She doesn't want to be taken. For this interpretation means that she does want to be taken, and Mordechai wants her there. That's problematic. But the Ebenezer is consistent. The Ebenezer believes that, in fact, Mordechai wanted her in the palace. And so he offers two other explanations. One is, V'acherim amru, ki bederech nivuah o b'chalom yada shetavot shua al yada li Yisrael, that he knew through some kind of Ruach HaKodesh that she would be the instrument of the redemption here and therefore needed to be in the palace, kind of saw in the story a Yosef moment. And thirdly, v'anachon, and I think, Adina, this is what you were suggesting, or somebody suggested, ki asaze Mordechai b'avor shetishmor Torat Hashem b'seter shelo tachal nevelot v'tishmor Shabbatot. Jewish girl in the palace of the king, if they knew she was Jewish, she wouldn't be able to observe very quietly and discreetly what she needed to observe. Right? Shabbos, Kashrus, she needed to be able to kind of navigate secretly so that she could remain a Jew in secret. If they knew who she was, then it would become problematic for that. I think it's a little bit of a stretch to suggest that Mordechai wanted her in the palace, but you understand the difficulty of the story. She is stubbornly holding on to this refusal to identify herself. We know in the end it will serve them well, but they don't know that yet. So something else has to be driving the decision process from their perspective. Right? What's driving the decision process from God's perspective, I understand. What's driving the decision process from their perspective still needs to be identified. Is that clear? Understand the question?
Yeah.
So another possibility.
Actually, I don't really understand about from God's perspective. Why would God want her to be taken to this whore?
Why is Yosef taken to be sold as a slave down to Egypt and ends up being in the position of viceroy of Egypt? Right? That's the Rabban Shalom's plans for as Gemara puts it, Makdim Refu Lamaka, for setting the stage so that eventually the people will be in place to be able to enable the salvation and the victory of the Jewish people. That's Rabban Shalom's.
But her direction. Life is ruined forever.
If she went back.
If she ends up in Sheshgaz, it's ruined forever. If she ends up as the king's queen, then she's in a position of power and authority like Yosef in Mitzrayim. I mean, I think the story is, the parallel to the story of Yosef is clear.
Is there a significance, because the second time it says when the maiden, in English, but it's the two of them. So
there's the whole way through.
So it's always that.
Yes.
So
we're going to come to that issue in a minute. But it's from the beginning. Look in Pasuk.
So it always says that. So the second grouping, they weren't there the first time then.
No. Just
this is a second grouping.
Second round. All of the tier two choices.
That is beautiful.
Right.
Okay, so the other ones are in the other.
They're in Beit Shashgaz.
Okay.
And then they ubikabetz betulot shenit. They go out and gather a second round.
Okay.
They might have been too young the first time. That's possible.
Yeah, that is also possible.
It seems to me it makes a lot of sense from what I thought.
The whole thing is very, from a woman's point of view, this story is very troubling.
It would make a lot of sense that Mordechai would want her to be the queen, because even without knowing that something's going to be happening, you know, she could have some influence, or she could get some information. Or something.
You are a Jewish father. Your Jewish daughter has been would like nothing more than to live in peace. And here come the king's men, and they go and gather all the women of the land in order to find a concert for the king. Last thing I with great respect to the Ebenezer, I do believe the last thing in the world Mordechai wants is for his daughter to be taken. I just, from a sharp perspective, I think that is problematic. There's one more piece to it, but I'll come to it in a second.
Well, how do they know these women are? I mean, how do they ask? How do they know?
I'm assuming they're young enough not to be married. Well, they're not married, right? In this is pre-60s. Okay, this is if they're not married, they're betulot. Right? Betulot means not married. It's not that complicated.
So why is there a second round, though?
So that's my point. That I think the second round is because he's bothered by the fact that she's refusing to disclose who she is, and he's threatened by that. Uh-huh. So he threatens her back. That's
not like secrets,
right?
Insecure.
That's
right.
Yeah, that's for sure.
He's independent. Vashti was independent.
It didn't go well with Ahasuerus then. There's a lot of pieces to this, but that little story, you know, the notion that there's a round two. I can't tell you how many times I've challenged. It just kind of misses the radar screen. That round two is there. Uvikabetz betulot shenit. Just a remarkable piece. All right. So let's come back to the question of what is driving this this non-disclosure, if you will, of Esther's identity. So the third possibility. I'm going to suggest two more. But the third possibility I saw in a really very interesting article by Rabbi the name of Avraham Shem, it doesn't matter what it's written up in a book published by Yeshiva Tar Etzion. It suggests that Mordechai's issues or Mordechai's concerns for her are two different concerns at two different times in the story. In other words, it's not necessarily the same issue from beginning to end. At the beginning, right, here's a father who doesn't want his daughter to be taken, and he doesn't want. And he's looking after her concern, looking after the fact that what's going to become of her. That's concern number one. Once, however, she is taken, the issue that he has changes. And what he points to is a very subtle change in the language of the text. If you look in the little box that I put on the page, I put these two psukim side by side. In Pasuk Yud, it says, "Lo higida Esther et amav et maladata." She did not disclose, in the past tense, her nationality and her birthplace. Ki Mordechai tziva aleha asher lo tagid, because that was what Mordechai told her. Don't tell them who you are. Don't tell them your background. Don't tell them your identity. Possibly because, as Rashi says, make you less desirable. Won't end up. Being taken won't end up being. Now, actually, I skipped the pasuk. There's in the text. Look at pasuk, the next pasuk. After she's taken, pasuk yud aleph. Uvechol yom. That's pasuk yud. Pasuk yud aleph. Uvechol yom vayom. Mordechai mitalech lifnei chatzar bet hanashim. Every day, she's living in Beit Hegai. Every day, Mordechai walks by. Remember, he's an officer in the king's court. He has access. Ladat et Shlom Esther, to find out how she's doing. Uma ye aseba, and what will become of her? Meaning, what are they going to do? Are they going to actually send her to the king? They're going to send her home? Maybe there's a chance till that night to the king that she can get sent home. Or is she going to get sent over to Beit Shashgaz, which is probably where she would prefer to be. Okay. So what becomes of her is the concern to Mordechai at stage one. Don't tell them who you are. Make yourself less desirable. Ma'ya seba. What's going to happen to her? But at the end of the story, this focus shifts a little bit. If you look at Pasuk Chaf, which is either in the text or on the page, Ein Esther magedet moladata ve'et ama kasher tziva aleha Mordechai ve'et mamar Mordechai Esther osa kasher hayta be'omna ito. She's already taken into the king's court. She's already been given the crown. She's already sitting on the throne. And there it says that on a continuous basis she refuses to disclose her nationality and her birthplace, or her birthplace and her nationality, as Mordechai had instructed, which is exactly the same phrase as it was the first time, with the additional phrase, that Ma'amar Mordechai Esther Osa Kasher Ita Be'omna Ito, meaning he would continue to be able to give her instruction, direction, counsel, Ma'amar Mordechai, Mordechai's instructions, she would follow as she did when she lived with him. Says Rav Shama that, in fact, by the time once she's taken, there isn't really a reason to hide that she's Jewish. But there is a need to hide something else. Before she's taken, she needs to hide that she's Jewish because she doesn't want to be taken, right? So she, her background, her nationality, her identity, right? None of that is... The less they know about you, the less desirable you be. But once taken into the king's palace, once you're already there, finding favor in the eyes of all the guards, and they're looking at, this is a Yosef story, then suddenly Mordechai's tone and agenda changes. Because she's already in the palace. She's already in the position of Yosef. She's already finding favor in the eyes of all the guard, of everybody in the palace, including Achashverosh. So now what's the critical role for Mordechai and Esther?
For him to still have access to her and to be able to give her advice.
Right. For him to be able to continue to counsel her, direct her, guide her.
Because he was in the courtyard before.
He's not in the courtyard. Remember, Yosheb Bishar HaMelech means he's an officer in the court. It's not that he's in the courtyard.
No, but I'm saying he's a different place.
He's in, the Shah HaMelech is the court. Hmm. Right? He's there. But he can only continue to give her counsel if...
The relationship isn't known.
Right. If nobody knows the relationship that's between them. Because if they know the relationship between them and they know that she's in fact one of his daughters, suddenly it becomes very complicated for her to, or for him to have accessed counsel, guide... Mordechai, what do you think? The notion that she is that he's her adopted father suddenly becomes a complexity in the story. So as the second time around, she's constantly refusing to tell him who she is, but for a different reason. Round one is that she doesn't get chosen, but once she's already in the palace, once she's already there, now the goal is not to be thrown out. Now the goal is to be able to continue to listen to Ma'amar Mordechai. Ma'amar Mordechai is only available to her as long as they don't know
who she is,
that she is in fact his daughter, adopted daughter. And so the second text adds that Ma'amar Mordechai ester osaka sheretabim no. It's almost a cause and effect. The ability for Mordechai to still be able to counsel her is predicated on the fact that she's not disclosed who she is or what her relationship is with him. So Shema points out a remarkable nuance in the comparison of these two texts. Look at the sequence. In round one, in Pasuk Yud, Lo higida Esther et Ama ve'et moladata. Which came first?
Ama.
Because the agenda there, what's driving her secrecy, is the fact that she's Jewish. Mm-hmm. In round two, what she hides is first moladata. And then Ama, because what's driving the secrecy there, it's the same secret, right? They have to identify, if they knew that she was Jewish, that Mordechai's Jewishness is known. Mordechai's lineage is known. Mordechai ben Shimi, ben Shimi, ben Kish, Ishimini, Ishiudi, everybody knows who Mordechai is. But that she is hidden, if her birthplace is known, then you start to do the lineage. If you know who her father is, and her mother is, then you know who her uncle is, or her cousin is, like suddenly the family lineage becomes known, then it's not only the Ama, but it's the Moladeta, so the Moledet, the family line, becomes the critical factor, so that he can continue to have access to her. So there's two different issues driving the secrecy, says this particular article by Avraham Shama. It's an interesting theory that would recognize the fact that she is there. Okay. It's a reality. It's a Yosef story. She's already in the palace. Now, Mordechai needs to be able to watch and see and look after her and look after what's going to happen. She's got to be there for a reason. Unknown what that reason is, but if they disclose who she is, suddenly the relationship with him becomes known and he loses the ability to access and counsel her in a form that, right. Nobody knows the relationship until when? When does the relationship between Esther and Mordechai become known?
When she has to go and plead for the Jews.
Not quite.
I thought that was when she tells him. The second time. Second time.
After Haman is hanged. Right? After Haman is hanged. In Perek Chet. At the end of the story. Perek Chet. The relationship does not become known until the end. ביום ההוא נתן המלך אחשוורוש לאסתר המלכה את בית המן צורר היהודים ומרדכי בא לפני המלך כי הגידה אסתר מהו לה. The very end of the story, their identity is disclosed, their relationship is disclosed.
Well, how could he keep talking to her all the time anyway? You know, the queens don't get secret messages from other people or visitors.
Yeah, why? She's the queen, she can hold court, she can have people, it's not secret. She has access to the king's council. I mean, she's the queen. Why wouldn't the queen have access to the king's counselors and officers?
I don't know what the queen's role is besides to
be beautiful.
I don't think that's a concern. On the contrary, I think that his right, what happens when the letter is disclosed, Haman's letter? Mordechai goes out to the Shah HaMelech, and she sends messengers to him to find out, and there's a conversation back and forth via third party, because he's sitting, he can't come into the court at that point. Had he been able to come into the court? In Perek Dalet, when Mordechai finds out about the decree of Haman, why is there a go-between Esther and Mordechai? Why do they need a messenger, Hetach, to go back and forth?
Because he's not in the court.
Because
he's in mourning
before right.
His clothes.
Because he's wearing sackcloth. It says so.
Pasuk
Bet. Perek Dalet Pasuk Bet. Or Pasuk Aleph. Mordechai Yadat Asher Nasa Vayikra Mordechai Begadav Vayibash Sak Ve'efer. Right? He's wearing sackcloth and ashes. Vayavo Ad Lifnei Shar HaMelech Ki Ein Lavo Shar HaMelech B'Levush Sak. He can't come into the palace because he's wearing sackcloth. His normal place is in the court. His normal place is in the chambers. He can't go into the court because
Mordechai was Jewish.
Yeah, Mordechai's Jewishness was known. No question. Right? And then Esther, who doesn't know about the decree and who doesn't know about anything, she sends the messenger, Hetach, to go and negotiate with Mordechai. What are you doing? Why are you in sackcloth? So there's a conversation between them, but it can't be in person because he's sitting outside the palace. But otherwise, they can communicate with each other on the contrary.
That's what I mean. She's queen, but she can't even go outside.
I don't think she's going outside. She is the queen. It's not...
I think Henry VIII kept his wife's...
But they're not suspicious because Mordechai's a Jew. They're not suspicious because Mordechai's a Jew and he's coming to counsel with the queen. That's nothing unusual.
Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah had Jews in the palace of Babel and Persia for years. That's not. On the contrary, until her, as long as her identity is hidden, once her identity would be known, then the relationship would be clear. This is too early a time to disclose that and risk the relationship between. That's theory three. I'll share with you one other theory that I think has a very powerful suggestion. I think it has some challenges that need to be worked through. I'm not necessarily going to be able to do that today. But there's a third possibility. And the third possibility is actually built around a very famous midrash that needs some explanation. So there's a Gemara in Megillah. I'm sure you've heard this before. It says, or that suggests, that Esther and Mordechai were in fact married.
Yes.
You've heard that before, correct?
Yes, that we have.
So we need to understand where that comes from. Take a look at the Gemara in Megillah, source 3. Uvamot avia ve'ima, lekacha Mordechai lo levat, as her father and mother died, Mordechai adopted her as a daughter. Tana mishum Rabbi Meir, al tikri levat el lebayit. Don't read it as a bat, but rather as a bayit. Bayit is a home. Bayit is a wife. Bayit is a spouse. Don't read it as a bayit. And the proof to that is a story, a pasuk in Shmuel Bet. Right. So we're not too far afield in our study of Sefer Shmuel. Pasuk in Shmuel Bet. Story of David and Bathsheba. when the Navi comes to criticize David for his having taken Bathsheba, he tells him a very famous parable about a man who's a neighbor, who's a poor man, and kol ke'im kivsa achat ktana, there's a rich man who's got many sheep, and there's a neighbor who's a poor farmer, and he only has one sheep. And this sheep he purchased, asher kana, he acquired, vayechayah, and he raised her, vatigdalimo, and this sheep grew up with her, imbanav, and with her children. Why a sheep would grow up together with this man and his children? This parable we'll need to understand in great detail. Right, ate of his food. Why would a sheep eat of his food? But okay, mipito tochal, mikoso tishten, drank of his cup, ubechekot tishkav, and rested in his bosom, vatehilo kevat, and was like a daughter to him. Meshum de bechekot tishkav, havelo kevat. She slept in his bosom, and therefore she's like a daughter. Ella kebayit, achinami kebayit. Bat means bayit. Bat daughter means house, means a wife. Okay? So the pasuk in Sefer Shmuel I get. But the fact remains, and here's the pasuk in Sefer Shmuel, the story of David and Bathsheba, which is like of all of the stories that are left field, why would you go to David and Bathsheba? But nonetheless, here's the pasuk from Natan, who says that this neighbor who had what one wife, right, was like right, the analogy to the sheep who he raised and who ate at his table and who drank of his food and who grew up with his children and slept in his embrace and was like a daughter to him. I don't know, it sounds like a wife, not a daughter. Right? Forget the story of Esther for a second. It's a strange pasuk. It's built on that, based on that pasuk, the Gemara links the word bat and bayit, daughter and wife. What is going on? Another example. Medrash in Rut Rabba. At a left field, completely unrelated, but nonetheless. Says, Rabbi Yossi bar Chalafta, Miyamai lo karati libiti beti, uli ishti ishti, ela libiti ishti. I never called my house, my beti beti, I never called my wife, or my house, my daughter, my wife, and my wife, but rather I called my daughter, my wife, and my wife, my daughter. What is going on here? It's weird, right?
Yes.
Weird, okay. So to understand these midrashim, both of these midrashim, we need to understand a critical piece, a link that's missing in our understanding of the relationship between men and women in the world of Tanakh. I don't know, we've discussed this in various contexts. I don't remember when or where, but I've mentioned this before. It's a very important piece to understand the whole dynamic of the status of men and women in marriage in the world of Tanakh. This typical standard role of marriage in the arena of, in the biblical time frame, always found or always had the husbands more or less a generation or two older than the wives. That's not an accident. That's by design. Think Yitzchak and Rivka. Think Yaakov, Rachel, and Leah. Yaakov's in his 60s when he runs to the house of love, and at least Rachel and Leah are young children. Leaving aside the medrash, whether she's 3 or 12, but she's certainly a young child. Think virtually every relationship in Tanakh, the dynamic is such in which the husband is at least a generation older than the wife. The exception is Avram and Sarah, which is a remarkable story. But they're 10 years apart. Okay, so the exception is Avram and Sarah because they're only 10 years apart. Whereas everybody else is at least 20, 30, or 40 years apart. There's a complete generation change between them. Why? So that has to do with the dynamic of the role of marriage. So we think the problem that we run into very often is that we take modern sensibilities, modern values, modern structure of society, and we superimpose it back into the world of Tanakh. And it's a mistake. Can't do that. We have to put ourselves into the world in which Tanakh operates and the value system that was assumed relevant at the time. And pre Medicaid and Medicare and nursing homes and assisted living and pre all of the structures of society that we have today to care for elderly, who cared for the elderly? Right? And the answer is, well, so it depends. No, so the answer is it depends. Okay, it depends on the following structure. Marriages typically were arranged or organized or start when the husband is a generation older and the wife is typically a very young girl. Think all the midrashim about Rivka being 3 at the well or 12 or right, young girl. And in those early years of that marriage, they're not living together as husband and wife. They're living together as
father-daughter.
And the relationship is very much one of a father looking after the daughter. That's why, now think of the story in the Torah about the Ama Ivrio, right, the father sells her as a servant or as a wife, right? Although the young girl that the father can marry off at the age of 12. Today's society, that would be cruel, right? Unheard of. But in the world of Tanakh, that was standard procedure because you raised the wife, quote-unquote, as a daughter. And as the years went on, the period of time when they're of age to live together as husband and wife and to be married and to have children, and then as society moves on and the years progress, what happens? The relationship shifts. And in the older years, she takes care of him mm-hmm. as we would an elderly parent, almost like a child. Mm-hmm. And so the relationship of the dynamic of the relationship of the wife goes from almost a daughter relationship to a wife relationship to a mother relationship. Mm-hmm. And you go through all three stages in the course of a married life. And then at the end of that life, when he's passed away, who takes care of the mother? It's the children. That's why the role of the firstborn was given that extra portion in the inheritance of the estate to look after the mother. All of these pieces were all structured around the same principle. That's how society was structured. That's how you looked at people were cared for. That's how it's just a fact. That's the way it worked, the way it operated. It explains a lot about the dynamic of husbands and wives in the Torah and in Tanakh overall, because there was an assumption, it wasn't about the status of men and the status of women, it was about the status of age. Okay, think about Rivka and Yitzchak and the way in which she talks to Yitzchak or engages with, or doesn't talk to Yitzchak, right, or doesn't engage with him, and we think about how critical we are of her, that she doesn't confront him, she doesn't talk to him, etc. But think about the fact that he's a generation older than she is. From the moment they meet, he's a generation older than she is. But that's normal operating procedure in the world of Tanakh. If that's true, now consider the following. Mordechai and Esther are cousins. Right? So it says bat dodo. But they're not the same age. They're not the same generation. How do I know they're not the same generation? Because Mordechai adopts her as a
daughter.
Vati lo kibat. After her father and mother died, Mordechai adopts her as a daughter. She's a young girl. She's a young orphan. And Mordechai adopts her as a daughter. Problem. You can't adopt a cousin as a daughter. Halachically, yichudishes, etc. You can't do that. You can marry her and raise her as a daughter, because that's what you would do. That would be normal procedure in the world of Tanakh. Marry her and then raise her as a daughter until such time as she's old enough to become your wife, and then eventually look after you. That's the way society is structured. Problem.
Well, then you could read the fact that she went to the palace as a wife.
Wait, when the criteria
she
that they
use,
she is a petula because she's too young to be married.
Okay. But she's
married.
Right,
it's a very great. It's a technical issue, but it's not technical. It's the core of the story. She's in fact married to Mordechai legally, but she's being raised as a daughter. Yeah. And here's the king's men gathering together all of the
unmarried
betulot.
The
now you have a problem. Now you have a problem. Because what happens the moment they find out that she's Jewish, that she's of the house of Mordechai, and that in fact she's probably married to Mordechai? What happens to her the moment they find out that she's no longer in that status? No. No. What pasuk did Chazal quote when they wanted to prove that she was a wife? What pasuk did they go to? Davin and Batsheva?
Yeah.
What do they do? Think Abraham and Sarah in Mitzrayim? Think Yitzchak and Avimelech? Right? If they find that she's a... They're not going to admit they made a mistake.
They're going to kill him.
They'll kill him. It's not about whether or not they're going to throw her out. She's been taken. You can't get rid of her. But you can't have the king married to a married woman.
So you go kill him.
So you kill him.
That really fixes the problem.
So understand that he can only help her. This is a classical biblical story. He can only help her. He can only enable her. He can only provide assistance to her. He can only provide access to her and counsel to her if he's around to do it. And so in a very profound way, he says to her, if they find out who you are, not only are you in danger, but I'm in danger as well.
So why is she gone in the end?
After the story's over, now she's the hero, he's the hero. I don't know if she ever tells me they're married. But she does tell them, I don't know, but at that point...
She stays married to Ahasuerus?
Yes, she stays married to Ahasuerus. So I don't think there's a...
children?
We don't know.
We don't know.
Does the structure of a bigger society go by this kind of...
Yeah, I think this was standard. We see it by David, right? What did David do when he had a problem with it? Yeah. I mean, that was the story of Abraham and Sarah by Mitzrayim when he said, decide that you're my sister. Rather than, actually, the word achot, you should just be aware, the word achot can mean sister, but the word achot is also the term used for a fiancé. No, a nurse is only a modern Hebrew. Okay, not in Tanakh. A nurse comes from the reason achot is a nurse in modern Hebrew is because the Catholic Church ran the hospitals, and the nuns were nurses, so the sisters were nurses. That's why a nurse is called an achot in Hebrew. It's got nothing to do with Tanakh.
But
that's what I wanted to tell you, that the word achot in Shir HaShirim is a betrothal. So imin achotia is not about being my sister, it's about being my fiancé, and therefore not being legally married. It comes to the same piece. I mean, he's not traveling with a sister, but he could be traveling with somebody who's not yet married to him. That's the part of the same issue. It's about the preservation of of her life and his life in the dynamic of their relationship. Much more to be said, but for now we're going to leave it and give some thought to the rest of the story.